What color makes you the most money?
It depends.
There's not just one.
Don't paint
answer.
Your restaurant blue. Blue psychologically suppresses appetite.
Hey, I mean, I was gonna open up a restaurant and paint it blue. So no, I won't.
That's so fascinating.
Don't do it. Okay. Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, it's Lisa. This is The Lisa Show. And I hit a milestone the other day that I never thought I would. And here it is. As of right now, I could conceivably own a white couch. A white couch. Now listen, I've lived my life too poor to buy a new couch, or with so many little kids or big kids that it would be a stain magnet, not worth the daily cleanup. But apparently, I'm in this new era, my white couch era. And it's so weird because I don't want a white couch. I mean, I don't think I want a white couch, but it also never felt like I had the option. So part of me is like, I finally can, but I don't want one. Anyway, I may not be an empty nester yet, but this has got me thinking about other rules I didn't realize I was following when it came to my space, my surroundings. Cash and lifestyle aside for a moment, how do you know when something, quote unquote, is you? When it's time to buy a couch, a rug, a new spatula, which one do you choose? Why does it matter? I'm also painfully aware that some of my home is starting to look a little dated. The last time I really redecorated was the first time I really felt like I had any money to do it, and we committed hard to gray walls, white trim. I mean, it was very in at the time. Honestly, I still love it. But Pinterest is gently suggesting that I'm way overdue for an update, and now I'm overwhelmed. So, today's guest, Carrie Ann Rhodes, is the perfect person to talk about decorating and how to know if you're doing it the right way. She is a professional interior designer, and at least as far as I'm concerned, she knows everything there is to know about decorating and design, but she's also extremely emotionally intelligent and has a gift for helping others find their own style. And life is better with a friend. In today's episode, Carrie Ann offers three tips, not rules, about how to make design choices that are right for you. I asked her to come talk about my decorating overwhelm, ignited by Pinterest, honestly, and all the choices I have. And she had the most interesting advice, which I haven't been able to forget, about ceramic artichokes. However, like many conversations in my life, this one started actually on the topic of ice cream. The thing that bothers me is that ice cream in specific keeps getting smaller and smaller for the same amount of money, and it's making me really mad. That is something that is not a big deal that makes me irrationally angry.
You don't think
angry.
That's a big social problem? I think
so
you're underestimating your
idea, but is there any, what is that for you?
Maybe it's not so small, like it is more of an issue. Packaging. I hate packaging. I think we have gotten it so wrong as a society.
Oh, what do you
just
mean?
Everything. What, probably 20 years ago, my husband's grandmother said that her family of seven would fill one silver, you know those old-fashioned silver trash cans like you see in the movies?
Yes.
Their family of seven would fill one of those a week. Back in, you know, the 50s and 60s.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Of trash. And I, in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm just, how?
Yeah, how?
Because I have two children, two adults and two children in my house, and we are filling, like our kitchen garbage could easily be filled up once a day. And not just like food scraps and things, but it's all of the packaging. And that makes me insane. And I fantasize if I could go back. Honestly, if I was starting freshman year in college this year, mm-hmm. I would take my design, you know, I'm a designer. I would go into product design and I would revolutionize the packaging world. I would get companies on board
because
they want to look good and they want to look good socially too. You know, like, oh, we're on board with this. We're going to save the planet. You know, I've got ideas. Any investors out there?
Okay, this is so interesting. This is a great idea.
Want to fund a 49-year-old's packaging dream.
I have a dream.
With no experience.
It is a packaging dream.
It's real romantic.
I love it. It's great. It's a way to, you know, you kind of get to know person. Okay, so this is my awkward transition from that to this. Is, you know, there are things that, like, no one's going to ever listen to us about, right? Like, that we think, no, I have a really great idea. Everyone should do this, but not everyone's going to do it or whatever. But we have you here, and what a lot of people may know, may not know, is that you have a design degree. You are a very creative person. You've created a lot of different mediums, but you are, have taught and have practiced all of this stuff. And I think a lot of people, everyone lives in a home or mm-hmm. a house mm-hmm. or a dwelling, a space, I will. And not everyone, most people don't have a degree in design, and yet we're all expected to decorate our homes, right?
Like, right.
Affect your surroundings do affect how you feel.
Absolutely.
What you think about, you know, your peace of mind. I think it even affects, like, your mood and temperament, emotions, and things like that. And they've done studies about this, right, with
absolutely.
Wall color and that you should put in the kitchen and that you shouldn't, that either satisfies hunger or makes you hungry. Like, I mean, we could get so granular into this, right?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of studies.
But before we do, I want to take a step back and make it really simple that when you're looking to design your home and you're looking, okay, I want this place to be my home. What is your best advice on how to design your home?
I start with a question always. I ask people if they want help with their homes or whatever. I say, well, what do you like?
Now, pausing here for a second, I think, what do you like can be kind of an intimidating question. Also, it surprised me just a little bit because when I envision the role of a professional designer, I think there's a certain element of, I don't know, tell me what I should like. What am I doing wrong here? I mean, how do I make it look good? I imagine decorating my home with things I like to be chaotic. I mean, I like a lot of things, but this is my home. Shouldn't I defer to the experts or adhere to some three-step process? Side note, now, what my kids' bedrooms look like when they were little and they brought in the things that they liked, it's not exactly going to make the cover of a magazine. But the more Carrie Ann talked about it, the more I realized she wasn't talking about just style.
So, you know, you start with, well, what do you like? And that can mean anything. It can mean, well, there's a style that I like. Like, I've seen this before, or I've seen this in magazines or in movies or in TV or on Pinterest, or my ethnicity is important to me, or travel is important to me, or those kind of things come out in, well, what do you like? And so some people may have, well, I have this painting I like that I found at a flea market, or I have these pillows that I like. You start with just, well, what do you like?
Carrie Ann does recommend Pinterest, by the way, as a tool to find your personal style. And that's just the invitation I've been looking for to make another board. Twist my arm. Okay, I'll do it. Instead of using Pinterest to discover aspirational decorating, use it as a tool to narrow in on your taste. And I also love this advice to start with what's important to you, because that's an easy answer. It's not overwhelming. What are the memories or the parts of your identity that you want to be reflected in your space? That's a different approach. And it ties into something Carrie Ann warned about, one of the biggest mistakes most people make when trying to design their space.
I think the worst thing people can do in a home, bookshelves are having a real moment right now.
Are they?
Yeah. Like in the last, 5 or 10 years or so, bookshelves have become a real focal point in homes, and having details around a bookshelf to give it an arch or to give it lighting, or maybe they're glass, like glass shelves have come, you know, way back in style. And it's kind of become this thing. Buying thing for your house just to fill a space, I think, is the worst thing you can do. It's the saddest thing that you can
do. Oh, I hear people talk about that all the time, though. They're like, we have this big space, so we're thinking about putting a bookcase here or a piano there or whatever.
That's okay. But if you don't actually have a lot of books, what do you want to put on those bookcases? You can still have the bookcases.
Yeah, you could put something else on it.
But just going to a store, and I hope this is not to be offensive.
I don't want to offend anybody. This really interesting look right now, and I'm like, ooh, where are you going?
The ceramic artichoke. Like,
that is oddly specific.
It is oddly specific. Maybe this is my
thing. Okay.
The ceramic artichoke. I love artichokes. I love the way they look. I love the way they taste.
Yeah,
I love
great.
Artichokes.
Roast them up and roast dip them in lemon butter.
Put them on your shelf if you want. But it's the idea of just like going into a store and buying an accessory just because it's there in the store.
Oh,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Or
even if you like it?
You can like the artichoke. It's fine.
I hear what you're saying.
But allow yourself to take a little bit more time to fill that bookshelf. Don't just
fill it with junk.
Fill it with accessories. Like the word accessory in a home, I don't like that word. I don't want to accessorize my home. I want to fill it with things that I like. If it's not useful or beautiful, William Morris, a famous, you know, old-fashioned designer, said, don't bring anything into your home that you don't find either beautiful or useful. And I think those are really good words to live by. So don't rush. Don't rush to fill that space on that bookshelf. Don't rush to fill that, you know, little space in the corner.
I want to jump in and point out that this tip number one, don't rush. Not rushing to fill a space is an interesting idea because I think of decorating or rearranging as something that has to get done. I like it when it's finished. And I think most of us want our spaces decorated as soon as possible. And this advice is counter to that. Waiting, like Carrie Ann is saying, waiting for the right meaningful object or souvenir is a strategy I don't hear people talking about. And it's definitely not what Amazon is recommending to me in all the targeted ads saying, here's 30 beige tchotchkes that would look great on your coffee table, windowsill, bookshelf, etc. A new influencer-approved living room is a click away with same-day shipping. With Amazon Prime and Instagram, we can get immediate filler items from bookcases to wooden display chains very quickly. You know the ones I'm talking about? Everybody has one. Waiting also gives you time to really consider what's important and what's not. Figuring out those priorities takes time of its own.
For instance, I don't have room for a piano in my house. I have room for a keyboard, but I don't have room for a piano. And I could force that piano to fit somewhere, but it would always be wrong.
Yeah.
Because if I had the space, then that piano would be there. So I've got a keyboard and it's in a space that's appropriate where it fits, etc. So things like that. Now, if you're, there is a caveat here. If you, obviously, if you are a pianist and music is that important to you and your family, like the expectation is that we all play the piano, then you're going to make it work. Like that, it's okay for that piano to have maybe more of a
focal point
or prominence in the home. But in our home, it's a hobby thing. It's not, none of us are performers. Unfortunately, no one's taking piano lessons, which breaks my heart, but that's another
thing. Listen, we got to know what to let go of.
Yep, I had to let go of my dreams of musical children. But so, you know, we have got the keyboard, so it's there, and the kids can sit down and play and whatever, but that's what I had to let go in this house. So things like that. Start with the priorities. You need a bed.
Sorry.
you need a bed.
You don't need the piano in there.
You don't need the piano. And you don't need, you know, that really cool vintage record player. That's on the B or C team. Let's start with the A team. Let's have a bed. Let's have a side table and a lamp. You know what I mean? Things like that. That helps you go slow. But if you're a person that does know what you like, buy what you like. That's okay. If you have a whole room ready to go, you don't have to take your time. You know what I mean? You've got it all set, ready to go. You take your time when you're just, what do I put there? I can just go to the store and buy that ceramic artichoke and stick it there.
I hope that there's somebody listening who has a ceramic artichoke.
I hope so.
That they love. They're like, yeah, but she wasn't talking about mine.
My grandfather was an artichoke farmer.
Right.
There you
exactly. There's an exception for every rule.
My mother has an artichoke.
Does so she just really? Yeah. Are you trying to out her right now?
No, it's actually a real artichoke.
Oh.
And it dried and it's beautiful. So she just kept it.
Okay, so that's different.
That's different.
Not a ceramic.
She didn't
one.
Go out and buy it just to fill a space.
Okay, so some decorative artichokes should be in your home if you love it, right? But when you're starting out, whether from scratch or a redo, this idea of starting with the A team, things you need, like a bed or a table, and then moving on to the B team, like a bookcase, or a C team, like a cool vintage record player or piano, organizes your design choices in a way that seems logical and manageable. So having had time to think about ceramic artichokes and other things that exist only to fill a space and designing when you need all A, B, and C things, let me tell you about my story of starting from scratch. It's really a story about something that lingered in our home for a long time. As a newlywed in my early 20s, I didn't have much. We had a futon, basically. So the wedding and the gifts we got were really important because we didn't have a lot any money. Sure, I knew what I liked and didn't like. I registered for gifts, like one does, and we received a lot of great stuff, but not a lot of decorative things. Those are luxury items, after all, and fall behind pots and pans and linens. But I remember getting this very well-crafted, beautifully constructed quilted throw pillow. I'm sure it was handmade. The only problem was it was brown and pink. And I kept saying, yeah, it's great, we need it, but it's brown and pink. It's brown and pink. I mean, I couldn't get over it. And I felt bad. I still do. That I was so critical of a gift, a timely, homemade, so very meaningful gift that I'm sure someone spent a lot of time and thought on. But those aren't my colors. That wasn't how I wanted to decorate my house. But beggars can't be choosers, and we displayed that brown and pink pillow for many years. Looking back, I think that I was really figuring out something that seems obvious to me now. You want your home to reflect you. It feels good to love every item in your house, and no one can choose that for you. Side note, for our wedding, Christopher's Aunt Judy gave us this really cute hand-painted magazine box to put by the side of a couch or a table in the living room, and it was bright red. And when she gave it to us, she said, I asked Chris what color your couch was, and he said red. I could tell she was really happy that she'd given us a personal gift, but I was so confused because we had a sage green futon. Again, we didn't even own a couch. And so I asked Chris, and he said, yeah. She asked me, Oh, I thought she meant my parents' couch. And I said, well, why would she care about your parents' couch for our wedding? To which she said, oh, yeah, you make a good point. So we were not killing it in the decor category out of the gate. But anyway, being broke makes everything harder, and design can seem infinitely expensive on any budget. So I had to ask Carrie Ann, what is worth the money? And here's her decorating point number two about crying once. You'll see.
The things that are worth investing in are furniture first and foremost. That old saying, how does it go? If you buy it well, you only cry once. Or something like that.
Surely they haven't been acquainted with my emotional ups and downs right. In my daily life.
So if you buy quality furniture, you're only crying once. But my problem is have we ever had the money to buy the quality furniture the first time? That's where we struggle because I know I can get this somewhere else, or I can get it at this kind of store and it'll be cheaper. And if I don't love it in 5 years, so what? However, if you invest in really good quality pieces that are well made, they can last a long time. And if they're not super trendy, but a little more timeless, like there are plenty of, think of all the like mid-century furniture that has been so hot for the last 20 years now. Mm-hmm. Some of it is like crazy, like it will, it will have like a crazy print and like really trendy colors for that time, and it mm-hmm. just doesn't work now. But a lot of it is leather or a neutral kind of fabric that's never really gone out of style. And those things they'll stay classic. And so I'm not saying you have to have, like, I have a green couch. I'm not pretending that my house is like neutral and classic. It is not.
Right.
But if you buy pieces, be a little aware of that, of like, how long can this last? How long will I love this?
Laughing though, because if what you like is
is
weird,
my green couch?
I have a navy velvet couch that I have been saving up for that I just bought this past winter, and I love it.
You deserve it.
It is not practical, and I bought a big
old— Why is it not practical?
Kelly green rug with a picture of a tiger in the middle.
Yes.
Of it. And it is not timeless. It is, but I will say, I waited a couple of years so I could get to save up so I could get exactly what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And it does make me happy.
There you go.
Use it every day. I use both those pieces every day.
Those mid-century chairs that had the crazy patterns on them?
Yeah.
They made someone happy too.
Oh, yeah.
And so there is plenty of room in design for those types of things, even if they're big purchases. If you can do it, if you love it, if you know you love it, go for it. I know you're happy.
Buy it well and you only cry once is a great second tip. Let's cry less, yes, for sure, in as many situations as possible. If you wait and buy quality that lasts long, that makes sense. It's better than, say, buying cheaper stuff more often and replacing it more often because it makes you really examine whether you're actually saving money or not. It may take more time, yes, but as she addressed in tip number one, don't rush, it's all going to be okay. And expenses aside, there are some design exercises that cost nothing. Carrie Ann brought up an interesting point about how a single person can influence the design of their neighborhood. These principles aren't limited to just inside our homes, which leads us to her tip number three, which honestly, I didn't see coming.
It extends to our communities too. If you, as a person, as a citizen in your town, if you have input into helping outside the borders of your own home, we have control inside our own spaces that we live, our apartments, you know, wherever. But we have less control outside. But where we do have control, if there's an issue that comes up in your town's ballot about lit signs or about green space requirements in neighborhoods, like that little strip of grass that needs to be whatever, it's worth speaking up for those types of things.
Carrie Ann's third tip was get involved with your outside community space.
I visited my hometown a couple of months ago. St. Louis is where I was born and grew up mostly. I've been back, you know, but was so struck by the charm of where I grew up, and everything is brick and everything just had this kind of timeless quality. Even the houses that were obviously built in kind of the weird times, like the 60s and 70s, where we had weird roof lines and mansard roofs is what I'm thinking of, like haunted house looking roofs. Anyway, you know, even though stuff could be funky, there was still this timeless beauty about it. And I live in Utah now, and I have lived in Utah's largest planned community, where house placement was also considered along with school placement and shop placement and all of that, making a cohesive community rather than just one neighborhood or one development. Here's another development. They're all interconnected and there's a design theme flowing through, even if it's just the similar plants and trees that were used kind of thing. And it makes such a difference. I currently live in a neighborhood that was just built by contractors. You could just buy the plot of land and then you hired a contractor to come build a house and there's no continuity and it's noticeable. And it creates a sense of community when you have connecting features, even just similar light posts or a sidewalk, you know, having a sidewalk that runs through your streets. Those kind of things are what make a neighborhood. What make it so that you can participate in your neighborhood and talk to neighbors and play outside. And I just hope communities don't lose sight of that. And so if you have a chance to have input in your community about that, and it's important to you, go ahead and vote that way. Go ahead and show up to that council meeting about that new building that's going to be built. And I know that people have cared about that in my community, and it's made a difference to keep a 7-story building in an appropriate place, not smack dab in the middle of our streets. Off to the side, it's beautiful.
Well, those kinds of things matter, to be like being a good neighbor and to be able to enjoy your neighborhood and things. I know that in an area where I live, that a lot of the houses are being turned over because they are so old. And some houses will be, block somebody's view that was never blocked before. And take away some of that green space and for a bigger house and less yard. And I'm not saying,
you can't do that.
You can't do that. And I think everybody needs to make their own decisions for that. But it does affect the design of other people.
It does.
It does.
It affects their space too. And that's why some cities, they do have ordinance. What do they call them? They call them like commandments and not commandments. What is it? Something in ordinances.
Now that's going to bother me. I can't remember. Ordinances and codes and
something. It's like C and O. I'll go back and look anyway.
We'll Google it later.
We'll Google it. We'll add it in with the robot voice.
Right.
Anyway, you can't build a structure in this area that's higher than this or, stuff like that.
You know when you're out to lunch with a friend and neither one of you can remember a word or a term to use, and it's on the tip of your tongue and your friend's, and then you think of it on the drive home? Yeah, that's what happened. Covenants. The word we were looking for is covenants.
You know, I used to get embarrassed because my dad would go on sort of like just these lectures about how part of being a good neighbor and being kind to other people is taking care of your yard because that affects all of the other, you know, property values and things like that. And It's funny now that I've been a homeowner for several years, I tend to think that his loud complaints were warranted. And I'm actually agree with everything that he said, you know, that part of being a good neighbor is worrying if it looks nice.
Right.
And again, not expensive. Not, you know,
no,
and
not, I
know,
we're not talking fountains.
I'm not, yeah, please don't put a fountain in your front yard, but by just, you know, caring a little.
Right. And if I honestly, there was a house I passed by recently that the lawn is tall and it hasn't been previously. And I actually wondered, are they okay?
Yeah.
What's going on? Are they okay? Do they need some help? Maybe they're trying to sell the house. Maybe the occupants have moved. And children are now tugging. You know what I mean? It could also be a caring thing of like, oh, what's happened to my neighbors? Do they just need someone to come by and give them a hand?
I love that a discussion about design and your best advice on design has like, no, really, I'm being sincere, like has led us to talking about communities at larger and what connects us. Because you do think, well, it's my house. It's inside. Who cares? It doesn't matter. And I think it does. I do think that it does affect how you think about yourself and how you feel every day, and that does affect your community. When you you study of design and you talk to people about this, and I'm sure that there's some people who think, oh, it doesn't matter, you know, it's not fundamental, while others there are who are like, oh, this actually matters a lot. What is your answer to those on both sides?
I've experienced this working in commercial settings where I have to work with contractor. Well, I have to be the contractor, right? Or the project manager. Yeah. And sometimes when you say interior designer, there's a lot of assumption about what you know and what you can do, right? And that you get called like, well, you're just a cushion thrower. It's one of the more derogatory.
Is that the derogatory term?
Oh, you know, you're a pillow fluffer, a cushion thrower, and you choose colors and kind of and things like that. My education goes further than that. There are lots of people who are natural designers who do not have design education who are fantastic and who can absolutely project manage and do things like that. But something that I appreciate about the education I got was understanding the psychology behind space. And so a lot of people can look at a color scheme and go, oh, I really like that, without having the vocabulary or the
knowing why.
The language to know why.
I just like it.
I just like it. And that's good enough.
It's calming.
Right?
Yeah, whatever.
But when I'm trying to convince a company that this design concept that I've put together for them is so that they will make money. There are quantifiable data points, right? There is a matrix backed up by research, by all that, you know, color psychology and by all the studies that have been done that say that doing these things help people feel secure in a spot. This feels safe. This feels unsafe or insecure. This color scheme promotes these types of feelings versus, and really in your own home, you can do whatever you want. Like there are people that like chaos. To them, it's energizing and it's, you know, it does something for them psychologically. But what I can bring is that knowledge kind of backed up with a graph and with an Excel spreadsheet and with points of, well, this is what will make you money. This is proven. This is gray area that we can work with. But here are the things that, you know, we can't mess with if you want this kind of outcome.
And so, what color makes you the most money?
It depends.
There's not just one.
Don't paint your restaurant blue. Blue psychologically suppresses appetite.
Hey, I mean, I was gonna open up a restaurant and paint it blue. So no, I won't.
That's so fascinating. Do it. Okay, that's why McDonald's literally is red and yellow because
that
those
creates
are
appetite
stimulating colors.
Okay, well, it works on me. In fact,
love those fries.
I need some right now. I want to pause here at the mention of French fries. I think it's quite beautiful and also overwhelming to consider how many design choices have been made to manipulate our choices, like to sell French fries. But if they can get us to buy stuff and not stop thinking about our favorite snacks, seriously, tell me you don't want fries right now. Our design choices can also be a way to create feelings of safety, home, peace, or excitement. It's our choice in what we want our space, our home, to be. So at this point, our conversation went from not rushing, only crying once, to thinking about your influence on your community. Before I let her go, I wanted to know if we miss anything, any tool, advice, or resource that we might not know about, but that is available to help us.
Kind of goes back to that question I ask of what do you like? I'm on social media and I, you know, love it. And sometimes I feel like trends get followed really exactly so that everything starts to look that way. I would tell my design students this. It's okay to have a signature. I can think of certain designers that are really prominent and I love their work and I would hire them because they're good at that style. They developed that style. And I'm talking about like modern farmhouse. You know, there are people that are really good at doing modern farmhouse. And so you would hire that person to do that modern farmhouse for you, right? But you don't have to adhere to labels. You don't have to adhere to what you see on social media or what you see on those TV shows. Don't be afraid to like what you like and to make your space unique. If you really like that farmhouse style, do it. But just make sure that instead of that ceramic artichoke, you're placing something that you love, something that you found, something that you made, something that someone gave you. It's your space. You get to choose. You get to be comfortable there.
I love it. You get to choose. You get to be comfortable there. It's your house. I will never look at another ceramic artichoke the same.
I'm really sorry to all the ceramic artichoke owners.
No, there's something in every generation. It was the glass.
It was the grapes.
Grapes for a generation. It was like the ceramic ducks.
Oh, my.
Remember the country duck with like a little bib? That was my generation.
With
the powder blue.
Yeah.
And now there's ceramic
dusty
artichoke.
Dusty pink and powder blue.
Each generation has theirs. Just warning. None of us are special.
I have glass grapes.
Okay. Oh, I wish I did.
But I live in a mid-century house,
so I had to have them.
So, you know, okay.
No one is immune. The grapes, the country duck, those dolls with the straw hair, you know, those cliche items that we're making fun of. I think it's so interesting that even the trendy objects, the things that aren't memories, they're just what everybody else has in their house. So you put it in yours. They go out of style so fast, allowing someone to pinpoint exactly what decade you were decorating in. And whether they're meaningful or not, they end up telling a story about you either way. You heard me telling Carrie Ann about my rug. Well, here's the rest of that story. Recently, I felt the itch to move my upstairs rug to the basement. Looking at that rug every day, right in the center of our home, it just didn't feel right to me. I'd bought it in what I considered to be a lifetime ago, and I felt different. And I know how this sounds. It's just a rug. But I thought that buying a new rug that was just for me, that only I liked, felt right, like I was accepting the reality that I live in now. Do I base a lot of my design choices on feelings? Yes. Yes, I do. So I moved it downstairs and stared at that empty space the rug left for a couple of months. And I was drawn to this blue and bright green rug with a cartoonish tiger on it. Think pop art, not Tony the Tiger. But I thought, well, it's not neutral. It won't go with everything. I don't think it's in style. It's kind of ridiculous. Will people interpret this as a cry for help? So gently, I asked others for advice, saying, is this too weird? What do you think? But I kept coming back to it because I love it, and I know it's ridiculous, and I don't care. I love it, and I've had it for several months, and I'll probably keep it forever. And I look at it, and I think, oh, I love that rug. Good for me. I've been overwhelmed about some of the pressure to change or just fill my home with some updated ceramic artichokes, if you will. And this conversation was a good reminder to me that decorating isn't just about good taste or copying a picture in a magazine or just getting what everyone else is getting and putting that in your house. Much like copying the opinions of others just because you
don't know what you really think is contrary to thinking and doing what you actually love. Decorating is about surrounding yourself with things you care about and that matter to you and that reflect in a little way what you really think and how you want to feel. So I'm keeping the tiger rug, which I now claim is a neutral. I'm not repainting my house. The gray walls are here to stay. I love them. And I don't want a white couch. But if I wanted one, I could have it. And that's enough for me.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Becca Hurley with help from Kenny Mears. We'd like to thank our guest, Carrie Ann Rhodes. Be sure to check out her Instagram, which will be linked in our show notes. If you haven't subscribed to The Lisa Show on YouTube, you can find even more content on our channel, including The Council of Moms, filmed live in our studio. As always, thanks for your messages. We read them all, and thanks for listening.
There's another podcast you might like from the BYU Radio family of podcasts, In Good Faith. Join Stephen Cap Perry as he connects with believers from various religions, Christians, Buddhists, Jews, Muslims, and more. Through their captivating stories, deepen your understanding of faith, religion, and spirituality. Stephen's global perspective, cultivated through extensive travel, brings a really unique richness to each conversation. Elevate your appreciation for the divine. In Good Faith, an inspiring journey of unity and enlightenment. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.